All right, we're back. I'm Darren Kaster. You're listening to The Green Majority. Green Majority is produced live at CIUT 89.5 in Toronto every week with the hard work and dedication of our team of volunteers. We're broadcasting on at least 17 campus and community stations in cities across the country, from Vancouver, BC to St. John's, Newfoundland. You can listen live nationwide on channel 826 of the Shaw Direct Satellite Network or channel 946 of the Rogers Digital Channel platform. And you can also get an audio copy for the time being by paying attention to our Facebook fan page, because our website is currently unavailable. But we do post links to the shows after the show on the Facebook page, so jump on there as well. Also, a random assortment of amusing or inspiring pictures and memes that I throw up there from time to time when they come across my desk. Don't forget that we love to hear feedback from our listeners as well. If you have comments or suggestions about the show, you can write to us at our email, thegreenmajority@gmail.com. Again, also via our Facebook fan page if you prefer. And you can also jump on our Twitter feed, which is at Green Majority. There we post links to Canadian environmental news stories, so a good way to stay up to date on news in Canada and around the world on environmental topics. However, we're going to go now to our national headlines. We're joined by Vanessa Purdy.
Thank you, Darren. The Nature Conservancy of Canada announced that it has until mid-December to confirm a $15.2 million deal to purchase almost 60% of Cockburn Island, in hopes of preserving the pristine ecosystem there. Although part of the forest was logged in the late 19th century, it grew back naturally after that. The portion of that the Conservancy hopes to buy belongs to an American-owned business, Huron Timber Company, that has thus far left much of the forest intact. The island's only residents, the Jibah Hasing First Nation, have no outstanding land claim on the area the Conservancy plans to purchase. The Nature Conservancy is a nonprofit organization that acquires land and manages it with Conservancy goals in mind. In the case of Cockburn Island, they would protect the land from large-scale quarry operations such as those on Manitoulin Island. A representative also said they might consider implementing a trail for the public. On Wednesday, September 5th, Environment Minister Peter Kent released the federal government's emissions regulations to curtail greenhouse gases from the coal-fired electricity sector. The regulations are proposing that new coal plants be only permitted if they emit less than 420 tons of carbon dioxide per gigawatt hour of electricity created. This amount is more than the earlier proposed 375. As well, units would get an additional 5 years to reach their targets, moved up to 50 years from the initial 45. Environmental groups expressed concern that these final regulations represent a significant weakening of the initial proposal. Peter Kent, however, says that they still meet 2020 targets and enable businesses to work towards them within the current economy. Canada's 2020 target is a reduction of emissions by 607 megatons. Bill Montevecchi, a Newfoundland Labrador scientist, said earlier this week that gannets, a type of duck, are engaging in a shocking new behavior. The birds, who should be nesting at Cape St. Mary's, have sought cooler waters and abandoned their chicks as a result. The phenomenon was noticed earlier this month, but according to Montevecchi, since then, there have been many gannet sightings off the coast of Labrador and even further north. It appears that the birds are searching for food as a result of an increase in local water temperatures by 3 to 4 degrees higher than normal. Wildlife officials say that the abandoned chicks are at risk of starvation as well as attack from other adult birds, and they cannot say for sure if the gannets have left for good or if they plan to return to their young. That's all for today's national headlines. I'm Vanessa Purdy.
Thank you very much, Vanessa. I would also like to offer a general apology on behalf of the Green Majority for generally consistently butchering First Nation and Indigenous. Certainly not only Vanessa. I think we've all had a turn at butchering that. So if you happen to be First Nations or Indigenous and would like to volunteer to help us correct our pronunciation, we're more than welcome to take that input, and I do apologize in general. However, leaving that behind, moving on, we're now going to talk to Dr. Tushar Mehta, who's joining us to talk about a new group that he's part of here called Run for the Earth. So I have you on the line there, Dr. Mehta.
Yes, you can call me Tushar. Thank you.
Okay, Tushar. You contacted us because you had a new group and you have an event coming up soon. I'd first like to start, let's find out a little bit about who you are. You're a family physician, is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And so that's a little bit of a left step for you might think at first glance, to have you starting an environment group. So why don't you explain that your interest in the environment just there to start?
Sure. Yes, I am a physician. I practice family medicine, I do some addictions work, and nowadays I'm doing mostly emergency medicine, actually. That's my sort of main job at the moment. I became a doctor because I was interested in helping people and just, you know, compassionate activities, and this was a job that seemed where I could do that kind of thing. But I do a little bit of international work as well. I do work in India once a year, and I'm interested in youth in Canada. I do some work with Project Canoe and organizations like that. But I've also been very interested in environmental issues all of my life. In addition to being a physician, I've continued that interest for a long time and tried to find gradual ways of getting involved in helping in that respect.
Okay, so your new group is called Run for the Earth, and who's the intended audience, I guess, of this? Are you looking for general public participation in this group? Is this just for physicians? Who's the target audience?
The target audience is everybody. So we want to get everybody involved, and the Run for the Earth name, we wanted to organize an event that would attract people and get a lot of participation and get the word out about what we want to do. So the event is sort of a means to the end. We want to get people to participate, but our main sort of aim is actually discussing environmental issues and sort of reframing environmental issues in people's minds. So the event is actually to sort of cause a splash, get people out, and attract attention.
Okay, and it says here it's a parade, not a run specifically. So just
that is correct. It's our first year. We couldn't actually get a permit for having both a walking group and a running group, so we chose the walking group. So we made it a parade, and that way we can have everybody's participation.
Okay, and so for we do have a national audience here, but if you happen to be in Toronto, September the 9th at 9:30 in the morning, Trinity Bellwoods Park, and they'll be ending the parade at the Toronto Vegetarian Association Food Festival, so that sounds like a lot of fun. I see some hands waving in the other room there. I think you may have at least one of our volunteers attending. So let's move on exactly to kind of what the idea behind your group here was. It seemed you've made it very, very clear that the focus of the specific issue that kind of cascades to all the other issues here is that you want to focus on the problem of overconsumption. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Sure. I think when we discuss environmental issues in the media, in society, amongst people, there's so much, there's so many opinions, so many different issues that people talk about. There's a lot of noise, and there's a lot of greenwashing, and people trying to sell you stuff or pass a policy and tell you that it's green and whatnot. But in most cases, people don't really focus on what is the root cause of all the problems in the first place. What is the main cause? And we want to take a look critically at environmental problems, and clearly the main problem is that we consume far too much as human beings. We consume far too much. And that's where all the problems stem from. And when we want to try and solve environmental problems, we have to look at the fact that we consume too much. And when we're talking about any kind of solution at all, we have to look at the arithmetic, look at the math, look at the science behind it, and think about how this affects consumption. In many cases, when people propose a policy or say that something is green or not green, they're not looking at actually, how much our current practice consumes, and this alternative practice or whatever they're doing may consume. And in many cases, some green proposals may actually be worse for the environment, and they're not looking at consumption as a whole.
Well, I think one of the kind of key examples of that we've had in the last few years was previous to American President Obama, we had, the junior Bush president. And one of the things he kind of put through as a placation to the environmental community there was the corn subsidy there, trying to, develop alternative fuels and stuff like that, which is, on its face, if you don't really know about the issue, sounds fantastic, but was actually a sort of a disastrous policy.
Absolutely. When I heard about these kind of things coming down the line, even before they were passed, I looked at, I thought about it, and I immediately knew that this was going to be a disaster, And because, the amount of fuel that we consume, the amount of energy we consume is enormous. Now, if we want to start changing land, that grows food to grow fuel, and it's just going to take far more land and divert food from people and into, cars, basically.
Mm-hmm. One of the key issues here, when again you're focusing on overconsumption, which I agree is one of the absolute linchpin issues here when we're talking about the environment, but it is also the kind of perhaps misunderstood, perhaps not misunderstood, issues of where you sort of lose a lot of people, not you personally, but where environmentalists kind of lose a lot of the unconvinced, or at least unexcited, because that idea seems to go in the face of the idea of how our entire economy works. You know, people say, well, if we don't consume, then the economy collapses. And I think that's where you get that either, you know, potentially in some cases understanding, or I think in generally in most cases misunderstanding of how, you know, promoting or protecting the environment is in direct conflict of us, you know, having a good economy and having good jobs. Do you agree with that? Is that a real concern?
That is a real concern. That is a real concern. The issue is a concern. But, you know, when we talk about consumption, when we talk about overconsumption, we also have to talk about the alternatives to overconsumption. So, you know, what our organization wants to do is we want to talk about, okay, so overconsumption is the main problem. What are the main causes of overconsumption, right? If we want to break that down, where do we overconsume the most? And if you look at that scientifically, then we can approach those things in a proper way. But then what does the alternative look like? Okay, if we have an economic model right now that proposes that we have unlimited growth, that's kind of the model that we have. And if we have a model where we think that you just have to consume as much as possible so that we can keep consuming as much as possible, right? Consumption drives more consumption because it's going to be always good for the economy always grows, and we always, you know, that is a certain type of model. But that model has terrible environmental consequences, but also has terrible human consequences, right? What would an alternative be that? What would be the good alternative to that? So one of the main things that we want to discuss in our organization is environmental economics and a way of life that would be happy, healthy, you know, vibrant for people, meet human needs, and be probably a lot healthier for people in many ways, healthier and happier, but at the same time consume a lot less. So we do need a different economic model. And this is a very, very key point, because the thing is that when you have a systemic change in the model that we use and that it applies to everybody, that's when net consumption will decrease. Otherwise, you have sort of people doing voluntary actions out of the goodness of their heart, which are important, but you don't have this sort of systemic change in behavior of people.
Mm-hmm. It almost requires at this point, when you're talking about economics, one of the key kind of factors to describe any of it is the idea of incentives. And I find that viewing things through the lens of what the incentives are to be an extremely useful way to sort of understand a lot of our, you know, problems with having to do with anything having to do with the economy. However, here, when I was reading through your organizational overview, you know, it's the right at the beginning, it says you want to deal with, sort of issues that are neglected or unrealistically treated in both environmental debate in politics and in society and also in public education. And so immediately in the back of my head went off a little light saying, aha, I wonder if he tackled the one that's my sort of pet issue that I feel is kind of the most feared. And to my happy surprise, you did, which is that the kind of X factor in all of these calculations of environmental impact and economy and why we need to kind of be constantly growing the economy, it's not intrinsically that. It's because the population is constantly growing. And I'm so happy to see that you were kind of not scared of tackling that idea of population. I mean, you say right here in your overview, population management, which, I mean, is two words when put together has very scary implications for people. And I think makes people back off, because then immediately you start, you know, having visions, or at least some people might start having visions of, global one Chinese style one child policy, or telling people, you know, it has sort of implications or scary visions of very draconian governments and having your life run and all these regulations and stuff. How do you deal with that issue? What sort of ideas do you have around discussing the idea of population in general?
Sure. So again, you know, when we look at the major factors that drive the world's consumption, population is a major factor. And now, it's not just population. I one of the things that I want to discuss with people, and the way we're going to discuss it, we're going to have education materials developed that will be put on our website, and there's also, I have the intention of writing a book about overconsumption as well. I call it the population consumption equation or something like that. I'm developing a name for it, but I'm sure it's an idea that I didn't think of that other people thought of too. You know, the total consumption equals the population multiplied by per-person consumption, right? And that gives you total consumption, right? You can break that down and look at subpopulations and look at a subpopulation and say, look at that population, multiply that by the per-person consumption on average, and then you'll see the total consumption. So you can look at the Canadian population, how many people there are, multiply it by the, you know, average consumption, and then, you know, and then come up with how, you know, how much we consume. You can do that for other countries. You can also do that for subpopulations. What do the top 10% of Canadians versus the bottom 10%? You know, you can do this kind of analysis, see who's consuming what, and that's a really important thing to do. Now, when it comes to population, looking at things scientifically, I mean, I can't comment too much about China's policies. I don't know enough about them. But when you study internationally and you look at research, you know, population is not decreased by taking away people's rights. Population is decreased by giving people their rights. Okay, and that's a really important concept. So the factors that affect population growth the most are the education of people. The higher people are educated, the better people are educated, the less children they tend to have. And there's pretty much, in some papers that I've read, more than double the impact by educating girls. So the more a girl, a female, most women are educated, the when they grow up and when it's time for them to have kids, they delay their first pregnancy much more, they tend to have less kids, and they have the personal desire to have less kids and, you know, bring them up in a different way, you know, because they're so much more empowered to do so. It also affects many other things. You know, women's rights increase the more that they are educated, you know, and whether it's violence against women or women's economic rights, you know, the more they're educated, the more they're able to have a better quality of life for themselves and their families. This goes for boys, too. We want to educate boys, too, but there's a bigger impact on girls. And we know that globally that girls aren't getting as much chance at education as boys are. So we want to, of course, you know, promote both, but this is the, you know, also other factors are maternal child health. So the better survival rates there are for mothers and their babies, the less children people tend to have. And there's many factors amongst there that we could probably talk about. One of the main things probably is the fact that, you know, people have a lot of kids in developing countries or other places because they feel that, you know, somebody may not survive, something may happen to them, we better have more kids because that way we'll be able to take care of each other. They'll take care of us, we'll take care of them, they'll take care of each other, all those kind of things. They'll take care of the extended family too. When people have a security that we're going to be healthy, we're going to survive, then people have less, you know, less kids. Economic development. When people have a basic economic development, that doesn't mean an economic development to the level of Canada, where we have to have so much material stuff. But when people have some basic economic security, they tend to feel laid back. Listen, my kids are going to survive. We're educated. At least we're like literate. We, you know, got some sort of an education that we can that helps us out in our life. That again, those factors all accumulate, and people then have less and less kids without any interference by anybody else. You know, without any policies or anything like that are imposed by the government regarding having less kids.
Yes, one of the things that has been mentioned in many, many classes that I've taken was the idea, or, you know, you see it as kind of a meme picture that gets sent around and stuff like that about where, you know, if everyone in the world lived with the kind of consumption, the levels of consumption, energy use, you know, everything across the board, the way that North Americans did, we'd need, you know, something like seven Earths or something like that to be able to sustain it. One of the things that just exactly to what you were saying here that isn't factored into that number was that Canada's population without immigration from a lot of these countries that have much higher rates of childbirth than we do, for the reasons that you just outlined, as soon as they come to Canada, the population decreases very rapidly as soon as they kind of get into this place, exactly as you said, where better reliability, they don't need to worry about, you know, having seven kids because, you know, four of them are very realistically might die before the age of 10 or 15. And that isn't really factored into that in number. So yes, I mean, you know, we don't need to all consume. There's no need for us all to consume the way that North Americans do, and we definitely need to reduce our consumption. But without immigration from these other countries, just Canadian born childbirth would drop off a cliff. Our population would actually shrink very fast if we cut off all immigration, because Canadians don't actually reproduce enough to keep up our population on their own. which I think plays a very important factor into some of the issues that you're talking about education and different lenses through which these issues that can be dealt with, especially when you're trying to deal with some of these tough issues that, like population, that people just really, you know, they get very uneasy when they even come up in conversation.
People do get very uneasy, and we have to realize that, you know, it's just interesting the way that the universe sort of conspires that, you know, good things create good things. When we try to promote responsible, compassionate things that empower people in developing countries, that's really what's going to, you know, cause a population shift that's, you know, going to get a decreased population. When we promote things that cause instability, lack of education, lack of people's rights, you know, people react by having more kids. You know, so it's not about us, you know, enforcing any kind of negative, you know, constricting policy that takes away people's rights. It really is about, you know, being compassionate and doing things in a very sort of responsible way that looks at the research around education, women's rights, maternal child health, you know, and sustainable economic development for people in developing countries.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we're very much out of time here. We're running right up against the end of the program. I want to thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Tushar Mehta, who prefers to go by Tushar. If you're interested in joining their run, you can look at, if you're in Toronto, you can look at runfortheearth.org. There's also a Facebook page and a Twitter feed for that, also under Run for the Earth. Thank you very much for joining us today.
You're very welcome, and I hope to see you there. And remember, it's a walk, it's a parade. We're not running, so everybody is invited, and anybody can be there, even if you're in a wheelchair. Come on.